Welcome to Mining Now. I'm your host, Jared Downey. Today we have a, well, I guess technically over the years, it's a part three. So we have Ideon on the show. They've been on, but we've had Gary Agnew on this show, their CEO. Today we have their CTO, but also the co-founder, Doug Shooten. And we are going to be discussing some of the company's growth, some of their projects there, and the growth has been very fun to watch, seeing the success they've had in the industry. This is also sort of a special episode because they've got a very in-depth case study, and we're actually going to walk through it. So we're going to do a little bit of intro, you know, how they've grown as a company, and then in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to open up that case study. It's going to be a very educational piece. So, Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So we switched spots with Gary. He's been on twice. Made you do the third one.
That's right. Yeah, I drew the short straw. So here I am.
Okay. I just want to start off with, we were just discussing off air. I think your company probably started maybe 2 years after ours or so. It's been fun because I got to talk to Gary about it a couple of times, but your growth, I mean, kind of a little startup company.
Yeah.
And now you're working for some of the biggest companies in the world.
Yeah. It's been quite the journey in a short scale of time. Started in a little garage in Richmond, and now we're 50 people. We've grown like crazy. It's great.
Is it different in reality than it was in your head?
Yeah, I don't know if I had a good vision in my head. I just knew we had something. Let's go with it. Mm-hmm. And it's been fun to watch it grow.
How did you and Gary start working together?
That was interesting. We had just spun out of Triumph, which is a research lab at UBC. We knew we had some kind of commercializable technology, didn't know exactly how to apply it. And we were looking for a growth-oriented CEO. And at the same time, Gary was looking for a cool new startup venture. He had just been in kind of enterprise mining space for a long time, built a good career there, and was looking for a new adventure. And we got in contact through UBC Ventures, essentially.
Wow.
And we met, had some good conversations. He joined for a couple months as a trial period, get to know each other, and then been off to the races ever since. It's been fantastic.
We've had people from, I think, Europe who've come out of those types of programs that have had really successful companies. But you're actually the first Canadian company that we've had on that sort of come out of those systems.
Okay.
And it's pretty interesting, like that 2 months. You don't really get that where you get to sort of work together for a couple, essentially date for a couple months before you actually jump into it. Yeah. That must have been a huge, because you had started it, right? That must have been a huge sort of breath of fresh air to just be able to have that experience and then go, okay, let's continue on.
Yeah, it was really good. And I think it was fortuitous that Gary had that kind of pause in his career and he had the base to do that. So we had been, you know, in conversations with a couple of other kind of CEOs as well, but yeah, it was a great matchmaking exercise. So.
Can we just talk a little bit about, you've done, we're going to talk about a project you've done, so we'll wait for that, but just maybe what you've accomplished over the last few years. I mean, just even talking to Gary, every time I talk to him, there's just more and more. So if you can provide that update of what Ideon has been doing.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, at our leadership meetings, we have a practice of going through roses and thorns.
Mm.
So, you know, every rose has its thorn. So we go through the great things and the bad things. And it's really nice to look back and, you know, in the midst of all the problems and stuff of a growth-oriented company, it's nice to look back and see what we've actually done in the past little while. And it's quite impressive. We've deployed our borehole technology for broad scale imaging of the Earth in a number of contexts down to a kilometer. That was successful. We've deployed the largest ever survey in the world. Every next one of our surveys is the largest in the world because we're leading this technology forward. But it was a large survey in the Sudbury Basin with Valet. And we've also done some really interesting work in imaging very small structures for a cool TV episode on the History Channel. So, going from the smallest little things you want to find to huge ore bodies at a kilometer depth, we've been moving mountains in all those spaces.
So these projects, what was sort of the process? Like I'm going through like the History Channel, so much of it is just demonstrating what you can do. Sort of you're the expert, I'm not. So sort of what depth have you got to demonstrate to up until this point?
Yeah, so we've like the case study we'll go through is a survey we performed at 800 meters depth. We have active projects down to even below a kilometer depth. And what we're able to do then is to really image up from that depth and view a huge field of view and interrogate that rock mass for density anomalies, density contrasts. And that has applications in geotechnical, mineral exploration, all kinds of spaces where there's a correlation between, you know, changes in density and something geologically interesting.
So how do you, just quickly, the one for the History Channel, that what was that for?
Yeah, it's a TV show called The Curse of Oak Island, and it's a pretty neat show. It's predicated on quite a historical kind of arc in an island off the coast of Nova Scotia called Oak Island. And I think already back to the early 1800s, there's been expeditions even led by U.S. presidents to search for lost treasure there.
Wow.
So it's got a rich history, and they keep finding new artifacts that just show some really complex history on the island. And what they were really interested in doing is just doing a large scan of a volume of earth that otherwise they would have had to just dig up and inspect by hand. And so we deployed 14 detectors in an area and imaged with really high resolution whether there is any evidence of tunnels, structures, or even, you know, high density structures associated
right.
with potential treasure.
Right.
So yeah, they've actually aired a couple of the episodes featuring our technology. And it's been pretty good. We got some good results.
Actually, we probably should just, I know we're going to jump into quite a few things here, but can you just give us like the bird's eye view of the technology itself, just for anybody who hasn't watched the other episodes?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's predicated around the notion that there's a naturally abundant radiation source from space. We have cosmic rays coming into the upper atmosphere all the time, originally from supernova explosions, you know, in intergalactic space. And that cosmic radiation permeates through the atmosphere and penetrates underground. And it consists of particles, subatomic particles called muons. And we can measure basically how many muons survive through a rock mass and measure with our sensors deep underground in each direction where muons are making it through and where they're being stopped. And the reason that's relevant is because muons will lose energy at a rate that's proportional to the density they're going through. And so where muons are being stopped more often, that's indicative that there's higher density structure in that direction. Mm. Or where they're making it through more, the converse is true, and there's lower density structure. So we can directly map density directionally from a single sensor deployed, you know, down to below a kilometer. And so what we then ultimately deliver is a full 3D model of density coming from that naturally abundant energy source.
Just quick hardware question. So is it a little sensor? Is it a small sensor? What actually is going down to the borehole?
Yeah, it's a probe. It's about 3 meters long. And
okay.
It fits in an HQ sized hole.
So okay.
Industry standard drill core size. And we deploy it ourselves. It sits down there powered by a little data aggregator at surface. And that data aggregator pulls the data off the detector over a period of time and then sends it off to us via satellite.
So at PDAC, you did a presentation, so walked through a project. I think it was, who's the project with?
It's with BHP, Nickel West.
And where is that?
That's located in just about 1,000 kilometers inland of Perth in Western Australia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our show, I swear, is becoming as much Australian as it is Canadian. It's hilarious.
It's a big market.
We do an Australian tour now. I think we did 20 episodes or something there in 2023.
Okay.
So this is there. I think, rather to not overcomplicate it, I think what we're going to do is just have you walk through it. Your knowledge is going to be so much beyond me. I don't even know how I'm going to ask questions to help. So I think what I'm going to do is just have you actually walk through it with the audience.
Sure.
Just go from there. And then we'll have the producers bring it up on the screen and see how it goes.
So, this is a really interesting project, and we're very happy that BHP gave us permission to present this at PDAC. We think it's a really compelling demonstration. And it was more than a demonstration. I mean, BHP derived significant value from this. So it was kind of phase gate. And what we did was we first kind of demonstrated that the thing works. And this is something we're finding in the industry, even though, you know, we've got a pretty good repertoire of case studies. We've published them. Every mining company wants to see it work for them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a general reality of the industry is it's complex new technology, and they have to wrap their heads around it. So it started with a first phase at a mine where they knew things very well, and they wanted to sort of see what we could see. So it was blind.
Yeah.
Kind of put us in there. We know what's there. You don't. Tell us what you see.
And oh, we I see.
If it matches what we know.
Yeah.
So that was the first phase. And then once they were convinced that it was actually working and we were seeing what they expected, they said, okay, now let's apply this technology in an area where we don't know what's going on.
Mm.
And let's really try to derive some value from that. So we were able to, you know, demonstrate meter scale precision over a large volume of rock. You know, we imaged in the second phase well over 1.5 billion cubic meters.
Wow.
So put that in context, that's something like 3,000 BC play stadiums.
Wow.
In volume of from, you know, a handful of sensors. Identified some really cool anomalies that were indicative of mineralization or interesting geological structure. And we also did a really interesting multi-physics analysis. So that's one of our core kind of tenets of technological innovation in the industry is there's so much more than just the individual data sets. It's the correlations between them that are teasing out the reality of the geology under the ground. And so we took airborne and ground gravity data that they had already and combined it with our muon tomography data, and we were able to extract a lot more from that gravity data by leveraging the kind of directional imaging capability of the muon tomography data set.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool. But yeah, it was situated, as I said, in inland Western Australia, so kind of northeast of Perth. And it was at two sites, Cliffs and Leinster Mines. Those are wholly owned BHP mine sites. And the first phase was at Cliffs Mine in the Agnew Waluna Greenstone Belt that is sort of a long mineralization trend that extends over 150 kilometers in the area. So at Cliffs, we put it in a relatively shallow part of their operation. So we deployed our sensors at about 180 meters depth. And what the Cliffs deposit was, we didn't know this at the time, of course. This was blind trial, but of course, looking back on it retrospectively, we have all of that information. It's a massive sulfide nickel mineralization, and it's associated with an ultramafic unit. And it extends kind of in the northern direction, and it's a subvertical thin shell. So it's about 2 meters thick. So a very subtle target from a geophysics perspective, obviously quite conductive. And we installed our detectors in the underground developments at about 180 meters depth.
So when you say underground development, are these tunnels?
Yeah, that's right. So this was an active mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they were actually going to be mining the area that we were imaging shortly after we imaged it. At least that was what we understood.
That's quite a maze for their underground mine.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, these are complex operations.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And so we used our version one detectors. These are the kind of original detectors we developed. We've since advanced the technology a lot, but this is a good candidate to use here because it's a very robust instrument. And we could install it in the mine and we wouldn't be too scared of someone, you know, hitting it with a truck or something like that. It could survive quite well in a
So how physically, how big is this?
It's about the size of a large kitchen table.
Okay.
So it's about 2 meters long and 1 meter across.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, sorry, just to clarify, so this is different than the one that's going down the borehole.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've done, I mean, this was the kind of the first version of our technology.
Oh, okay.
We've since miniaturized it more than 50x.
Wow.
So that was the big genesis of our spin out of Triumph was to really make this system work in a borehole, which is,
right. You know, but this that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But this is perfectly functional within like an underground mining
system.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Each of these detectors has a kind of field of view that it interrogates. And those are shown here, and you can see they're overlapping, of course. And that overlapping field of view actually gives a 3D triangulation because any bit of rock in those fields of view is being viewed from multiple directions. So you've got kind of a stereo vision effect, right? Just like your eyes give you depth perception by seeing things from slightly different angles. So these fields of view are interrogating, you know, millions and millions of cubic meters of earth, and each detector is splitting up that field of view into pixels so we can sort of image in each direction independently.
Sorry, just a quick question. What would the typical way be to gather this data before Ideon?
Yeah, I mean, the way that they map the ore body, I think, I don't know the genesis of the discovery, but certainly in delineating the ore body and extents, it's just drilling. Drilling, drilling, drilling.
And just sampling?
Sampling, yep.
Wow, okay.
So I'll show you momentarily, but you can just see the kind of scale of the amount of drilling that's gone through this deposit. Now, we're going to displace some of that for sure, and that's our goal, is really to be able to give mining companies the ability to get confidence on their mineralization and geological kind of structure with far less drilling.
Yeah.
Now, some drilling still required to sample, for instance, grade and geotechnical properties.
Right.
That's not going
to
go
but
away.
One of the ones that really stood out to me watching this, like that first slide where, again, the technical terms, I'm not very, you know, but you said 3 meters?
The length of the drill hole of the borehole detector?
No, can you go back to the...
Deposit itself.
The deposit, yeah.
That's about 2 meters thick in most places.
2 meters thick, yeah.
It's quite narrow.
Because I've had people on the show talk about the, like, mining, you have to basically take out these huge swaths. This could lend itself to the concept of just less mining as
yeah.
well, right?
It's a very interesting story, actually, and it's something I neglected to mention earlier, but one of the first demonstration projects we did was Orano, which is a French uranium producer that operates mines in northern Saskatchewan. And they've developed a very innovative mining method where they can extract small, high-grade uranium pods from surface, basically augering into them.
Wow.
And sucking the mineralization back up to surface.
It's almost like oil and gas application.
Yep.
But for mining.
Yeah, there's a couple of really interesting startups in this space as well, pursuing sort of laparoscopic surgery for mining. Yeah. And so you can imagine if you had, you know, crisp imaging of the geology, you knew exactly what the ore body was, that enables that kind of
approach. Can you imagine if that, well, it will happen, but from watching this type of stuff,
I'm looking forward to that future.
It'll be incredible.
Yeah.
It'll be incredible. Sorry, I'm disrupting your... But
no, go ahead.
This is my job.
Any questions? So yeah, within these fields of view, and then what we did, of course, we acquired the data, and then we used our analysis algorithms that we've developed to make sense of that data and make a 3D map of density. And so what you see here is sort of a slice through the model of density. So there's at each point in 3D space would give you a density value. And you can see the kind of color scales here where there's red is high density and blue is just kind of background density. And so this is just one section, but what I've also shown here is an isosurface of high density. So we kind of draw a surface around the area of highest density in that model. Mm-hmm. And that's what that red surface represents. And so what you can see then is if you compare that to the data they acquired from all this drilling, it actually is amazing correspondence. So you can take the drill data, you sample the density at all these points, and you kind of make a model, interpolate the density, it's called creaking, along that space. And you can make a model of the density distribution in the ground just from these individual drill hole measurements. And that's what's shown in green. And you can see that, you know, just basically mapping the contours of that structure in the density model and also the alignment of the highest density structure. And if you look on the other kind of end-on view, you see, you know, again, very good correspondence. Now, what was very interesting is that in this area here, you know, there was a known kind of extension or kind of lobe of mineralization coming out. And from the muon tomography data that we collected, we presented pretty good evidence that extension was a little larger than originally anticipated.
Mm.
So when we provided this data to BHP, at first they confirmed that we had imaged what we were supposed to image, like the density correlation of all this drill data with what we actually saw was really good.
Yeah.
But also there was some evidence that we gave them that there was actually more mineralization perhaps in this area than they had previously understood.
Wow.
So they're quite excited about that.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we can just, you know, slide this section forward and you can just see how that density kind of profile changes through the model. So, I mean, in the end, our understanding from one of the senior geologists at the mine was that they actually changed their mine plan because of this data.
So wow.
What originally started as a demonstration, let's see what we can do, turned into there's actually some really interesting information here that we didn't know about.
Because drilling, at the end of the day, you're still limited to, if you're testing just based on the drill hole, you're still limited to what you happen to drill, even if, unless you're drilling this close together.
Correct.
It's still, there's still reality of it, right?
Yeah. It's like, you know, the BC Place Stadium example again, right? You have this large volume and you put a couple of pierce points to it and try to estimate, you know, the average height of people in the crowd. It's like, it's a fool's errand in some way, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of geological interpretation that has to go into interpreting that drill data to make sense of it.
It's absolutely amazing.
Geologists are well equipped to do that, but it's still a challenging exercise.
Right. Yeah. Because these are all the drill, what we're seeing here, this is all the drill holes, those little gray lines.
That's
right.
Yeah. And this is even a subsample of all the drilling that was done there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was very successful. So then, you know, BHP had the confidence to say, okay, this actually works. Let's go use this on force and do something useful with it.
So now you're both going in blind.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
We're on equal footing.
Yeah.
And so we drove 150 kilometers down the road to their Leinster mine. This is a mine with a rich history, very prolific nickel producer. In the BHP's portfolio. And so we installed our detectors in an area between two known deposits, and they were really interested in understanding what was going on between two areas that they had already been working on mining. And so just give you a length scale here, you know, the survey area that we were imaging was over 3 kilometers at surface. And so, you know, from the ability to do that without drilling hundreds or even thousands of holes, obviously is kind of a big deal. So in that region, there is kind of three known deposits, Perseverance, Venus, and Rocky's Reward. These were in various stages of having been mined or in active mining.
Sorry, could you just go back to the other slide there just for a second?
Sure.
I just wanted to get an understanding. So this is, okay, so green, these are the deposits that are already, these are already getting mined then, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So or there's
in various
three?
Stages.
In various stages.
Yeah.
So there's three... Yeah, I didn't see the third. I don't see the third deposit. Or is one deposit?
Yeah, one here.
Oh, this one hasn't been mined yet.
Yeah, this one is undergoing underground mining.
So oh, I
been
see.
Some surficial mining here, open pit, and also underground. And this is only an underground mining operation.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And you can just get a sense of some of the drilling again that was in the area. But even with that density of drilling, if you're down here, look at that gap, right? What's going on there? You don't know.
Yeah, 3 kilometers. 3 kilometers.
Yeah,
you'd have to drill.
It's a big volume,
and just the investment in the drilling itself.
Yes,
would just be
and time, right?
Yeah.
Each drill hole performed to that depth takes weeks, if not months, and then to get the assay data back from a lab, it's a long period.
Well, I guess the other thing that this is going to is that if you're that cost now, if the cost of operation goes down, it can maximize. You're able to stay possibly in an area longer.
Yeah, there's two approaches here, right? I think, you know, reducing drilling budgets is probably not the end result. What we want to do is more efficiently use
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So you have a fixed budget now; you can drill more effectively,
right?
But also, you can decide to give up earlier.
Yeah. Right?
So if you can deploy borehole muon detectors down these holes and image a huge volume around and say definitively there's nothing here, move on.
Yeah.
You save all that drilling you would have done to just kind of hope and pray that you find something.
Yeah. So. Wild.
Yeah, so we installed our detectors in a long drive that was connecting these two deposits, these two mining
areas. I see.
And the area, the idea was to image the space above that. So again, we used these V1 detectors first. So you can see the kind of fields of view that they had, quite extensive.
Right.
And then we did them in two phases, so we moved them along. And the nice thing about this technology is that you can acquire data, you know, in disparate periods of time and just aggregate it trivially. There's no like... you know, leveling you have to do. You just take one data set from October, combine it with another data set from next year and do the analysis. So, and then we also installed our borehole.
This interview is making me feel very dumb.
I hope not. I hope it makes you feel smart.
I feel like if I was like a manager at a mine, it'd make me look really smart.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? We want to make winners.
No, it's just amazing stuff. Yeah.
And so we also... BHP was quite interested in a prospective area around the Rockies Reward deposit, and they drilled specific holes for the borehole detectors. So we set up a survey program with them to also augment the V1 detector survey along that drive with additional borehole based muon tomography here, and so we installed our borehole detectors, 3 detectors each in 3 different holes in the northern extent of the mine. To certain
you've curve. Got the four. You got 4 in the actual, shaft, like the
in the drive there.
In the drive, and then
9 borehole detectors here.
Right. Okay.
And so yeah, we installed those quite successfully. Very happy with how that turned out. And then you know, all in.
As right, just all right.
It's a massive field of view.
Wow.
1.5 billion cubic meters of Earth, at least.
Incredible.
So when we take the data from all those detectors and then run our analysis on them, you know, we get a 3D density model in that whole field of view. And if we take a section of the density model, just look at it at surface. So let's look at the density model close to surface. You can see some very interesting features right away. And one of the interesting sort of self-calibrations in the data set was, you know, if we look at surface, you see this low density structure, and it happens to pick out the contour of a known stockpile of waste rock on the surface.
Wow. Right?
And just picking it out perfectly, like to, you know, within meters. And this is from detectors that are like 900 meters away underground, picking that structure out. And so that was a good kind of, you know, okay, it's seeing things that are supposed to be seen.
Right.
Now, finding stockpiles on the surface is not the core use of the technology, but it was really good to get that kind of confidence. And so then we also see, you know, that low density structure to the northern extent as well associated with stockpiles on surface. So, you know, where you have loose piled up rock on surface, it can be lower density rock than solid. So that was good. But then we can kind of lower down underground and start looking at the density model in the subsurface where we're quite interested. And one of the first things that we see is a really good correspondence of a slightly high density feature that's associated with a north-south trending shear zone that is actually the place of mobilization of the massive sulfide that is the genesis of these deposits. And so that was really cool to see that we could pick that feature out. It was something that was not seen in the airborne gravity, the ground gravity data, but we were able to map it really quite precisely along the full extent of that shear zone.
Yeah. So where am I looking for that?
So that's this shear zone here.
Oh, I see.
That,
okay.
That density structure that follows it here.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's obviously a few more structures in there that your eye will be drawn to, and I'll go through those momentarily, but just focusing on that to start. Another really interesting thing. Now, in a sense, you know, we were both blind, but, you know, obviously BHP knows more about their mine than we do.
Yeah.
And when we delivered the result to them, we noticed a very strong low density anomaly right around where the Venus deposit was. And of course, we're like, okay, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us because we would expect this nickel deposit to have a higher density. But, you know, BHP told us after we delivered the results, oh, by the way, yeah, those are voids from mining activity. So
they're voids.
Yeah. So they had, you know, they were actively stoping and mining there. And there's large areas where they extract material. And we happened to have one detector that was kind of imaging that part of the mine.
Yeah.
And we were able to kind of image their mining activity. So inadvertently, we demonstrated a geotechnical application.
Right.
Which we've actually used elsewhere. It's like you go to a mine that may be a historic mine. Where are the old mine developments? You know, where are the
where are the
old mining stopes? And we can image that for our customers and provide them with geotechnical kind of assessment and mine planning information. But then if we look at the high density structures that we saw as well, one of the main features was really cool because it aligns very well with a north-south trending mafic intrusion. And, you know, BHP knew about that. There was a core kind of geological control in the area.
What's a mafic?
It's like a higher density rock type.
Okay.
And, you know, it was associated as a structural control of the mineralization.
Like,
And now, of course, near the deposits where they are mining, they had drilled a lot of it. So they knew it very well. But then in the intervening space, they had quite few drill holes to really pierce that structure. And so we were able to kind of confirm their main geological interpolation, their idea of how that unit trended in the direction where they didn't have data.
This is so fun because I've had to do these, like, just watch these presentations before. And I know they're important, but if you don't know some of the terminology by about halfway through, you're like, okay, I'm getting so far behind on the terminology. But this, I get to be the person in the crowd that's like, he's right. Raising my hand.
Yeah, yeah. It's something that I've had to grapple with in the industry as well. There's a lot of jargon that you have to get.
Yeah, and you're just watching and going, okay, you almost have to like, okay, I understand this and this, so then that must mean this, right? You're kind of piecing it together as you're going. But this is just amazing to be able to actually.
And I'm really happy with the team that we've grown. So we've got a great team of geoscientists now in Adyen.
Yeah.
And that's really allowed us to marry geology with the technology that we're doing.
Right? Yeah.
So it's really important for our customers. And then what we did was we took the airborne data that they collected. So they had flown an airborne gravity survey over the area, and you can see kind of this raster map of where they had high or low relative gravity signatures over the area. And they also did a ground gravity survey. This had been done even before we arrived on site. And the nice thing about a gravity survey, of course, is it's probing density as well. It's measuring the mass that you're locally have distributed around you. That's changing the gravity signature. And so we took those data and combined them with our muon tomography data, did a joint inversion, and came up with a joint model. Now, what was interesting is a couple of things. First, the kind of resolution of the gravity survey was significantly worse, but very sensitive to the nearer surface parts of that 3D space. And so when we combined the two data sets, the muon tomography from below, the gravity from above, we were able to kind of improve the resolution near surface and get a more compact structure that aligned very well. So you can see how this feature here is, you know, higher definition than before. What was also interesting is that this feature, which I'll talk about momentarily, was really seen very strongly in the muon tomography data. And again, from 800, 900 meters away.
I don't think the audience will see the mouse over the recording. So you're talking on the, I think, right-hand side, there's kind of two red deposits.
That's right.
Deposits.
Yeah, these smaller structures really off to the extreme of the survey.
Yeah.
And when we look at the airborne gravity, ground gravity, and muon tomography data combined, what's interesting is first that all those data sets are compatible with that, but we really noticed it from the muon tomography data. And that turned out to be massive sulfide. So really interesting, right? Potential mineralization vector. Mm. It turned out to be barren of nickel, which is a shame. But if there was ever a drill target to drill, that would be it,
right?
So if, you know, from the perspective of imaging this whole volume and deciding where to apply your drilling, you know, this is narrowing, vectoring in on massive sulfide is kind of the thing to look at. Mm. So really quite exciting. So you can see that was confirmed in drilling as well. So what's shown here, again, is some of the drilling data they had in the region, some of it piercing that structure that we noticed. And then you can see in this color scale here, the interpolated density from that drilling. And you can just see how well that corresponds to, the shell that we reconstructed.
This drilling was done pre you coming in? Or
I'm not sure when it was all done.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure some of it at least was done pre.
Yeah.
But some of it may have been contemporaneous.
Okay.
I'm not sure. So, I mean, in the end, you know, we mapped a number of very interesting geological structures along this whole 3-kilometer strike, you know, 1.5 billion cubic meters. And, you know, a key outcome of this was to refine their geological model to identify targets and also to identify places where there was no evidence of a density anomaly that was indicative of mineralization. And so, you know, the superintendent of geoscience planning was very impressed with the results. She, you know, she says has abundant information that they're going to be using into the future for their exploration program and advancing that asset. So,
well, do you think as you develop these relationships, let's say, you know, over the next couple of years, it's obvious that it's going to, you know, efficiency and all the things that people want to accomplish.
Yeah.
Reducing emissions is, of course, the big one for mines. Do you think they'll provide, or are you hoping that other mines will provide sort of hard data for you to go, this is, or do you already have some of that information where it shows this is actually, it's obvious that it's going to reduce.
Yes.
That it's so obvious. But
yes.
Do you have any numbers yet that go, it's 35%, it's 40%,
yeah.
You know?
So we have that in a way. We have it through, you know, demonstrations like this, and then coupling that with, you know, simple modeling. So, you know, if we get this resolution over this area,
yeah.
How much drilling would you need to do to accomplish the same goal?
Right.
And then, you know, we're just entering the stage now with companies that are actually changing their practice, right? So
yeah.
We're at that stage before where we were demonstrating the technology, they're using it for the first time, but they hadn't changed their practice in their exploration program or their resource
right.
delineation program. But we're now engaging with customers who are saying, okay, now we know this, we've got a feel for this technology, we've used it a couple of times and see how it works. Now we're going to use it and change what we would have otherwise done because of that. And so we're at that phase now where we can really get those clear value statements on what impacts we're having.
So on a project like this, is it do you have to go back? Is this completed everything that Ideon's going to deliver to it, or is there more that could be extracted from this specific project?
Yeah, I mean, first, our experience and relationship with BHP is going very well. So we're finding more and more applications to help them, you know, bring more value out of their deposits and out of their programs. On this particular project, I do see opportunities for even improvement. So doing more constrained inversions, even applying our AI capability to bring in more data sets to unlock that value. Now, on this kind of survey, we've delivered our result to them.
Yeah.
And they are very impressed with the ability to really dramatically reduce your drilling by up to 10x and get the same kind of coverage of
that. Is crazy.
Domain. Yeah.
That is crazy. I just one of those things. I don't want to just like, oh yeah, that's good. Like
just a 10x.
That is bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing it realized in changing workflows and making the industry more efficient.
Within mining, of course, but even outside of mining, are there other opportunities that you're looking at?
Yeah, I think within mining, we've got a couple of applications that we're demonstrating with customers right now that are outside of the scope we talked about today. I think we've narrowed our thesis of where we drive the most value, and we're focusing on resource characterization, exploration, and also like geotechnical void mapping, and also fluid migration monitoring. Are really interesting applications. So essentially anything where there's a density contrast, either spatially or over time, we have a lot of capability. And so within mining, we have a rich set of opportunities to bring value to our customers.
I want to ask you quickly about the sensors before I let you go. But before we go to that, I will ask that. I want to ask about you go from the size of this table to the size of little
coffee
sensor
cup.
What how I guess is what I'm asking.
Is it
on the surface though that it's connected to something, right?
Yeah, there's a cable that goes up to surface just to offload the data and to deliver power downhole. So it's connected to a solar panel at the surface, a meter by meter, and a little box that's not much bigger than a laptop.
Okay.
So and that's got a cell modem or satellite modem in it to link.
So it's still not the thing on the surface is still not the size of the table.
No.
Okay.
No. It's a small little box.
So what was the I wanted to focus on this project, but what was the process of getting?
It was a lot of simulation, a lot of design.
Yeah.
It was fun. We saw this already at the very beginning that. We built these first prototypes. We actually built the V2 as well, a slightly smaller, that we deployed very successfully. And that was just to get the experience to prove the capability generally, like the physics works, this thing works.
Right.
But we knew at the very beginning that there's no way we can require to move these big boxes around to do anything useful for our companies that we're working with. So we had it in mind for a while. And then once we kind of spun out a Triumph in 2019, and Gary joined in 2020, we really took the bull by the horns and said, okay, let's make this happen.
Yeah.
And so we had done a fair amount of background research and work and came up with some prototype designs. And then we worked with our engineering team, our physics team, and really narrowed in on a specific design that seemed to work.
Yeah.
Did a bunch of prototyping in our lab, proved that the capability was there. And then we worked really hard to get our first prototype built.
I bet.
It was one of those things where we had weeks before our first deployment, we had built our first system and tested it. And we were up till midnight the night before.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Had to fix the solder joints and this sort of thing. And classic startup stuff.
Yeah.
There's a famous picture of myself and one of our engineers. We were there till 10:30 at night. And we solved some problem that was befuddling us for a while, and we just, we're so excited.
Yeah.
It was looking back on it, it's a really fun experience.
Yeah.
In the middle of it, very stressful.
It helps you grow. It really does as a person. Hey, because it stretches you in a way that, university can't stretch you. Working for a company can't, being an employee, it can't stretch you that way.
And as a business owner, it's your money at risk.
Yeah.
So
as you're soldering, you're going, come on.
Yep. Yeah. You know, but it's good. I think it forces good behavior.
Yeah.
It forces you to be realistic, forces you to deal with the universe as it is.
Yeah.
And then to make solutions that make our customers happy. That's really the ultimate thing.
So. And appreciate, and it help, makes you appreciate when you get to do a project like this, like we've walked through today. You know what it took to get.
I've been doing this for a while, and still when I stand back and see this full 3D map of density coming from exploding stars light years away.
Yeah, that.
It's like, wow.
Okay. Wow.
It's cool. Physics is cool.
I wanted to ask you, maybe it doesn't apply to you, but I just more curious, is that, do you enjoy this development of, you know, like, so you, what is sort of your backstory? What did you were in school for what?
Yeah, I did a PhD in physics, particle physics.
Okay.
So I was working in a lab in Geneva called the Center for European Nuclear Research. And we're working at the Large Hadron Collider. So there's a large international collaboration doing fundamental research there. So I was part of the team.
Made famous by the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
They always talk about it.
That's right. Yeah, good old Sheldon.
Yeah.
So I was part of the team that was discovering and characterizing the Higgs boson, which was the kind of last big discovery in particle physics in 2012. Yeah. And then I kind of finished up with my research program at Triumph in 2014. And then jumped on what was then a internal research project at Triumph on muon tomography.
Wow.
So,
and when did you realize, oh, this is, that there's something here that I should be focusing on commercially?
Yeah, it took a little bit. I mean, when I saw the idea of muon tomography, I thought, okay, here's a way to take this esoteric research and do something demonstrably useful with it. So that was really attractive to me right from the outset. And I saw the kind of future of an academic career was less palatable to me at that point.
Mm.
I was looking for something outside of that.
So for that a was, specific reason?
Yeah, I just was, I guess, tired of the, there's certain drivers and incentives in academia, mm-hmm. and they don't fit well with me.
Right.
I really like the idea of building something that's useful and getting customers to say, I'll pay for that because it's so useful to me.
Right.
And that just kind of demonstrates the validity of what you're doing.
Where do you see is it about growing what you already have? Do you see other solutions that Ideon can
for sure
didn't touch on?
Yeah, our main thesis is that there is a rich opportunity to do multi-physics fusion, to pull in disparate data sets in the mining industry, to draw, you know, very powerful conclusions and intelligence out of that. And then also to give decision support to our clients.
Yeah.
Just giving them another data set to put on the shelf has limited value.
Yeah.
So you know, the industry in mining, I think, is crying out for improvement. There's a lot of metrics you can look at across the industry of worsening exploration performance, you know, 400% increase in drilling, 75% reduction in new targets, and basically a negative ROI on exploration globally. I think there's technological innovation is going to be the driver for future success in mining.
Yeah. So, and companies like yours doing it, it's so exciting. It's crazy that I get to do these interviews and walk through it and get to understand, and I get to also do other shows outside of mining, so I get to sort of communicate to people what's happening in mining that a lot of people don't realize. I guess the other thing, just quickly, for Ideon, is there other applications outside of mining?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of study on this early on. We did some really good modeling in, for example, oil and gas.
Yeah.
So especially in Canada's heavy oil reservoirs in northern Alberta, they use a process called steam-assisted gravity drainage. So they basically inject steam to liberate the bitumen, and then they extract that kind of liquefied bitumen through pipes. And right now they monitor that extraction through seismic programs. So they run a seismic survey at a period of time, then do it again 6 months later, a year later, and try to look at the difference in where the steam has gone and the bitumen has been extracted. And we did some really cool modeling where we showed that if we deployed a string of our detectors underneath that whole structure, we could give them continuous monitoring.
Wow.
With like four meter resolution on that reservoir. So big win for GHG, because every barrel of steam they're producing to inject in there, maybe inefficiently, is, you know, gas burned, and a huge cost possible. So, yeah, it was very interesting. But we decided at that time, you know, there's that perilous startup thing of chasing every shiny piece of tin foil.
Yeah.
Let's focus on something where we can have tractionable success very quickly. And we decided to focus on mining, but yeah, there's a lot of opportunity elsewhere as well.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I certainly hope this third episode is not the last, because obviously the Ideon story is really just getting started, actually.
That's the hope.
So
yeah,
thank you very much for coming on the show. Hope we do it again.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for watching. We're going to have links to Ideon. You can even connect. We've had Gary on the show. We'll have his LinkedIn as well. We'll have Doug's LinkedIn. And just connect with their team. Share out this episode. Make sure to subscribe. And let people, if you're a fan of mining, let people know what's actually happening in this industry, because it's getting more amazing by the day. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll see you on the next episode of Mining Now.